We're going to be talking about many things, including love marks. Joining us now is Kevin Roberts. He's the CEO of Worldwide Saatchi and Saatchi. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Let's talk more about love marks. Is it a new phenomenon? Does it take branding to the next level, so to speak?
I hope so. I think brands have become so commoditized over the past 4 or 5 years. Parity performance, all claiming the same stuff, yelling at consumers. And consumers are saying, you know, I actually know now that, you know, dandruff shampoo gets rid of dandruff. I know that laundry detergents get my clothes clean. What's the emotional connection you're going to make with me? Because, you know, consumers choose 80% of the time based on their emotions, on how they feel about something, how they respond to it. So love marks is a way of saying to brands, add mystery, add sensuality, add intimacy, become irresistible, not irreplaceable. And this is the task you're faced with now in today's consumer world.
Can every industry have a love mark, whether or not it be in radio, television, consumer-driven, different things like that, or it's only limited to certain markets?
I think we've written a book called Love Marks, and we've got a website called lovemarks.com, and there's entries from 10,000 entries from consumers around the world, and they choose everything, regardless of toilet, whether it's toilet tissue, whether it's soap, a restaurant, a shoe brand, a kind of music label, an artist. People are looking now to connect more rather than just transact.
So looking at that, are we in a consumer revolution, so to speak, that with the internet and different things like that, that consumers are inundated with so much information that in order to kind of separate themselves from the other brands, that they have to do something different, unique, and create that love mark?
You're absolutely spot on. We've seen a great transference of power. From when I was growing up working for P&G and Gillette, the brands had the power. Then we went through, you know, so if you were Coca-Cola or you were Pepsi or you were Mac 2, you had all the power. Then we moved to a position where power switched in the 90s to the retailer. So Walmart's the world's biggest company. And all that power switched to retail. What you're seeing now is that power has switched once again to the consumer. The consumer is boss. And he or she will decide what she buys, how she buys, whether she buys it on the internet, whether she buys it in the store, whether she buys it you know, on a recommendation from a friend. So power has switched to consumers. And it's a whole new world of marketing and a whole new world of selling now.
How did you come up with this concept called Love Marks? Because it seems to be something that you spearheaded, and now it seems to be catching on. I see you're doing a lot of presentations all over the world, so to speak, and people are embracing this as the next generation of branding.
The thing emanated really, Bob, from naked fear. I was terrified that brands were dying, and I was wondering the role of Saatchi and Saatchi might be in a world without brands. And so I was looking at what had happened, and it felt to me that this commodification that was taking place was going to, you know, the own label, the no names, the no logo, and all this kind of stuff. We needed something new. And so I came up with the idea first of trust marks, that if you built trust into the brand lexicon, and I talked to a guy called Alan Weber, who was the editor of a great magazine called Fast Company. And Alan said to me, you know what, Kevin, it's not enough, you know. Great brands are already trusted. So I was pretty despondent, really. So I did what you do in situations like that, opened a bottle of Bordeaux and kind of sat down, and then, as you do, opened a second bottle. And as I did, I was doodling away. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning. I was in Tribeca, New York. My wife was in New Zealand, and I was feeling, well, you know, nobody loves me. Nobody loves my ideas. And as I was writing that down, I drew a heart, and then I wrote, wow, trust marks, crossed out trust and saw the word love marks, called Alan Weber up at 8 o'clock next morning when I, you know, the drawing passed the 8 o'clock a.m. wake-up call test to still make sense. And I said, I've got it, Alan, it's about love marks. He said, now you're talking. And that's when we discovered that, you know, people do talk about love and stuff, you know. You don't love your MP3 player, but you love an iPod. A Toyota Prius is a love mark, you know, for many people nowadays. You absolutely love your own radio station or your own DJ or your own soap. So that's where it really came from. Came from fear, then through trust, and then into what is the deepest, you know, the deepest human emotion of all, which is love.
Take us on the journey. Like, say, for instance, a radio station, a country station, for instance, just hypothetically, they're like number one in the market. How do you transform them into a love mark? Is it something that an ad agency, a branding consultant firm kind of sits down with maybe a program director, someone in marketing and say, how can we take it to the next level? Is it that simplified or is it more complicated? Or if you don't have it, you just don't have it.
And you know you do love some stations, right? You do love some singers, and you do love some clubs, you know? I mean, I don't go to Dallas-Fort Worth without going to Billy Bob's because I love it there. And, you know, it's just a honky-tonk like a bunch of other honky-tonks. But for me, it's full of mystery. You know, it's full of sensuality. It's full of intimacy. You start with, you know, I guess the first thing you start off is by giving control of your brand or your station to the user, to the consumer, because most brand managers try to manage their brand and control the brand.
Oh, okay.
Whereas really now the consumer's boss, he or she wants to be interactive, she wants to respond to you, she wants to dialogue, she wants to plan, she wants to play with you. So I think interactive is the first thing. You've got to give up control, which is hard for most companies to do. The second thing is you've got to behave inside your company spiritually as a love mark. You can't produce a love mark if you don't love your own company and if you don't love your customers. So, you know, it's pretty hard for some of the guys in Detroit to kind of get this message at the moment. You know, the Detroit guys are trying to do it on price and on discount and on rebate, whereas Toyota is saying, you know what, we're going to build trucks, a Tundra for you. We're going to build a Prius for you. We're going to put the consumer first. And then in the book we've just written, The Love Marks Effect, there are kind of 27 steps in there that you can take, and you can take along a journey where you can earn love, because you can't demand it. You know, Nike or Adidas can't demand love, because consumers, just like in any relationship, say no, you know, I'm in control here. You've got to earn my love. So yeah, there's a kind of step-by-step process. The tricky thing that took us 4 or 5 years to figure out is measurement. You know, how do you measure an emotional connection? And we've now put a lot of work into that. We can do that now. We've explained how you measure now your emotional success, too.
Is that a new phenomenon, this thing called emotional connection? Because it seems like many brands are distant from their users, and it's about reconnecting. And is that a journey within itself?
Absolutely. I think right now you're just seeing that many brands took their consumers for granted. They put all their money against the trade, into promotions, discount, into price. And consumers are saying, hey, what about me? You know, forget this mass marketing. What are you doing for me? You know, look at, you know, book distribution. I mean, the book, you know, the major mass book outlets were terrible. So all of a sudden along comes Amazon and says, hey, I'm going to have a relationship with you. Amazon's not about price. It's about knowing you, making you part of a community. Look at Starbucks, you know, has nothing to do with coffee, really. I was in a Starbucks this morning. I mean, you think of the prices you pay, it's nonsensical. But you're not paying for the coffee. You're paying for the third room, you know. You're paying for that social environment. And consumers are looking for that now in everything they do.
How do you get businesses to make that paradigm shift? Because most businesses are driven by the numbers, and now you're basically saying get in contact, get in touch with the consumer, understand the culture, understand them. And for many, it's a big leap of faith in many cases, and something they don't understand because they seem to be bottom line driven, they seem to be numbers driven.
Yeah, I think a lot of business is still mired in the information age, where they're data wonks, you know, and the more information they've got, you know, the better they think they are. In fact, information now is a table stake. Everybody's got it. You know, if you're in the radio business, everybody's got the same demographic data, the same audience data. That's not where you get competitive advantage. People used to say, well, no, I know where you get it from. You get it from knowledge. Again, now we're all knowledge workers, right? Everybody's smart. We're all looking at the data the same way. So some companies have moved into the area of insight, right? So let's get the insight, you know, let's get closest to our customer, closer to our consumer. Let's see how they feel. Let's see what they think. Let's not listen to what they do or what they say, but let's try and understand how they feel. And that's really the current battleground. The battleground ahead will be, okay, having got information, knowledge, and now got closer to empathy through insight, how do you develop foresight? You know, how do you come up with an iPod, which nobody wanted, right?
Right.
But that revolutionizes the whole music industry, as well as revolutionize and transform the whole Apple company. So it's the journey of information, knowledge, insight to foresight. And I think the new battleground for business is don't keep hiring rational MBAs day in, day out. Look at anthropologists, sociologists, psychologists, communicators. You know, look at, you know, finding people who are connectors rather than directors, because consumers now are looking more for connectivity rather than direction. If you just look at all the networking sites on the net, you know, if you just look at YouTube, if you look at MySpace as well, if you look at all these consumer generated sites, it's really about connectivity, and that's what brands have to really understand and invest in.
Is it tough for businesses because they seem to always be reacting?
Yeah.
You're suggesting that they be proactive and really keep moving. Is that by design, and do some companies get it?
Yeah, it's a you've obviously got a lot of experience of corporates, because change, transformational change and ideas at corporates are very hard to drive, right? Because
they are.
You know, the hierarchy, the bureaucracy, the tradition, you know. Oof.
And in many cases, there's arrogance, too.
Absolutely. You know, humility is not kind of at the top five qualities of most U.S. businesses that I know.
Not at all.
And yet, that's where you've got to be today. What you've got to do now to be successful is to say, the consumer is boss, and I am going to embrace her and touch her and listen to her, and I'm going to connect with her, and I'm going to grow and develop with her. Rather than arrogantly, as we've been for many years, I know best.
But do they want instant results, and growing does take time? It just doesn't happen overnight?
I think one of the, you know, one of the problems we've got really in our competitive business is this absolute, you know, 3-month quarterly results phenomenon driven by Wall Street. And I think the great companies and the great entrepreneurs and the great ideas people take that as a pinch of salt, you know, and they say, well, job number one is to delight and dazzle the consumer with innovation and connection. Job number two is to put together a sustainable economic model, and you should judge me annually, biannually, and over 3 years. But it's a tough call to make if you're a public company in the U.S., you know.
You went from your first book, Love Marks, The Future Beyond Brands. Talk more about your latest venture into the Love Mark era, Love Mark Effects, Winning the Consumer Revolution, and maybe share some of that with our listeners.
Love Marks was the concept, the theory, the idea, and we put that out there open source 2-3 years ago. And the Love Marks effect now does a bunch of things. I mean, the first thing it does is it answers your question earlier, Bob, which is, okay, well, how do you make my brand a love mark? We never told people that first time round, obviously, because we wanted to excite and inspire them. And now we've got a story that we say, well, okay, well, here are the kind of 27 things you need to do. The second thing that this book does is it talks a lot about examples of great brands that have taken the love mark journey and what their results are, so that readers can see, well, hey, man, this is what Ben and Jerry's did. This is what Benetton did. This is what iPod did. Wow, okay. Third thing it does is it takes you out of theory and into the store. So we have John Fleming, who's the chief marketing officer of Walmart, give us a whole chapter on what's happening in store in terms of love marks. We have Jim Stengel, you know, the chief marketing officer of the world's biggest advertiser, Procter & Gamble, talking about the age of attraction and love marks. Then there's some new ideas in the area of design, in the areas of sustainability and inspirational consumers, and finally in romancing the shopper, as well as lots of stuff from, you know, heavy hitters like Renzo Rosso, the founder of Diesel, Tom Peters, Arno Penzias, the guy who wrote The Big Bang, and the top guys from a lot of companies.
A lot of people are embracing your work. Are you surprised for them? Are they looking at it for the next generation because they want to grow their business? Is the right thing to do?
I'm delighted now. I mean, I think if you're in the world of marketing and advertising now, it's probably the best time ever to be in live.
Oh, no kidding.
Because the consumer's boss and everything's changing and it's up for grabs and everything's so fast and interactive and mobile. For creative people, this is really a renaissance period where there is no one answer, you know. I mean, the consumer's not looking for one answer. She's looking for bunches of options. So it's very exciting creatively.
Do most people are willing to take that leap? Because you have, as you say, like corporate America, that is really kind of slow to change. They think it's do more, offer more fads, offer this, offer that, instead of just getting it right.
We're fortunate that we got very early support from the CEO of Toyota and the CEO of Procter & Gamble. And when the CEOs of P&G and Toyota embrace something, you know, it's kind of when they sneeze, the rest of the world gets a cold.
So you really have to be happy. Talk more in terms of some of the things and maybe talk more about the companies involved. Was it more of a case study? Was it more of sharing how they got it right? And did they know that they were getting it right way before the concept of love marks came into being?
No, I think, when I first went to Tokyo 8 years ago to talk to the head of Toyota about this, you know, we listened and over a year or 2 years, we had a bunch of conversations. And finally, Yoshi Ishizaka, who was running Toyota globally, said, yes, okay, Kevin, I want you to move Toyota from the most respected car company in America to becoming the most loved. So that was great. Hence you see things like the Prius, the Camry, and so on. A.G. Laffley, when he's running Procter & Gamble, said, you know, we want to create number one brands that people trust. And then a year later, after, you know, talking more and thinking more and putting some research on the table, he said, no, the dream of P&G is going to be to improve people's lives through creating brands they love. You know, and when you get the world's biggest branded company making that call, you're kind of on your way, really.
Is it difficult to create that love mark for a company that says, okay, we're good, but we want to be better, not only in our minds, but the minds of the consumer? Is it something that you amass a whole group of people and say, how can we do that? Is it looking at the data? Is it looking at the marketplace? Is it all of the above?
First thing we say is forget about the consumer's minds. They're already engaged. You got to think with your heart. So don't try and, you know, make a rational connection with her, because she's already way past that. She already gets that. She understands it. You have to connect with her heart. And what we tell people is think with your heart. And what we say that the key to this is figuring out how a consumer feels, not what she says and what she does. Most of the research is antiquated, you know, focus groups or data collection and so on, where everybody role plays and pontificates and says what they're expected to say. They don't give you any insights, and therefore you can't gain foresight. For us, we say, you know, we have a technique at Saatchi called exploring, which replaces focus groups and so on, and involves a lot of people spending real time becoming friendly with consumers, and in fact, living with them and going about their daily activities and talking with them and bonding with them, so that we can get more of a feeling as a friend how they're looking and feeling at things. And the way we judge the success is when you've been exploring with a consumer for a day, does she hug you as she leaves? If she does, then you're probably going to get some great insights that we can then use to drive marketing programs behind.
But isn't that a paradigm shift? Because most businesses are number driven. They don't really, they see the consumer as a number. They see them as a piece of data.
Yeah.
Not that you connect with them, but that the number represents them. And I'm thinking that, that if you not only understand the culture, understand the who they are, that it's really a win-win and you could still deal with the data.
Absolutely right. You know, everybody's got the same data as everybody else as well. You can't get competitive advantage now through data, because everybody's using the same questions, the same techniques, the same demographic data, the same psychographic data, and all that kind of stuff. So all you get to with that is parity. The winners, and also if you think there's a mass market out there now, you're wrong. You know, everybody's a market of one. You know, they're going to take their media, you know, on their mobile or on their computer or by word of mouth or through their radio station or through the newspaper or through the TV or all of the above. And they're going to take them at different times and so on. I mean, the trick now is really personalized marketing, right? How do we market efficiently and effectively one-on-one while still getting the benefits of scale? And the important thing in that is to be able to have a real sense of how your inspirational consumers, not the heavy users, the inspirational consumers, those people who will spread the word about your brand, who will share your brand virally with their networks of 200 people. I think these are the new masters of the universe.
We live in a technology-based world. So does the computer, the internet play a role, or can it play a role in this thing called love marks?
Yeah, I think we are actually moving into the screen age, really, where most communications will be handled through the screen, either the screen in your hand, which is your mobile, or the screen on your desk or in your den, which is your computer, or, of course, the TV screen. And the screen's a very, you know, dynamic medium, you know. It's entertaining, it's dramatic. I've written a book called Sysimo, Sight, Sound, and Motion, where we talk about, you know, the family of screens that are now available to us every single moment of our lives and how they will become more and more important. My view on media is that everything's going to be kind of interactive and everything's going to be mobile. You know, so, you know, you take your radio with you wherever you go. You know, the radio station's in the car. It's on your, you know, MP3 player. It's on your mobile phone. You know, wherever you are now, the old time of you sitting in your living room and the media coming to you and interrupting you is long gone. You know, you're not going to be interrupted anymore. You're going to choose all the time how you react with media.
So this is kind of an exciting time for advertisers, marketers, if they're willing to get it, if they're willing to think outside of the box, so to speak.
Yeah, there's a lot of fear out there, and there's a lot of fear, and there's a lot of excitement, and there's a lot of talk, and it's pretty exciting because there isn't one clear way forward. I guess the clear things are, in my mind, is that it's the consumer's boss. She's going to respond emotionally. It's going to be about interactivity and mobility, and, you know, it's going to be about emotional connections. So within that context, it's a hell of a great place to play.
And what's really interesting is I checked out your website, Love Marks, and I see that you've added sight, sound, and motion, Sysimo, as you say.
Yeah.
Was that by design? Is that because... And then you also offer personal and community profiles and ways of doing some search features as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think this whole sight, sound, and motion thing over the last 12, 15 months has just accelerated like crazy. You know, if you're a newspaper, you know, and you haven't started operating on the screen sensibly, you're going to die.
Oh, okay.
And I don't mean just putting your paper on a website. That's hopeless, right?
Oh, no kidding.
It's just hopeless. I mean, it looks stupid, right? But I mean, I was with the editor of Business Week the other day, and I think he told me he had more people interacting with him on their website than they had now with the magazine.
So, and when you really look at it, it seems like it's very interactive, whether or not it be blogging, whether or not
it
be...
Exactly. You're onto it.
Yes.
Right? And at the moment, brands are terrified of bloggers, when in fact they should be embracing and inspiring them. And yeah, they're not going to be shrills for the brand, but neither are consumers, you know. We can understand good stuff and bad stuff, but we want truth. So I think this whole blogging phenomenon consumer-generated content and all that kind of stuff are really going to be the drivers of a lot of marketing in the next few years.
So instead of cursing it and complaining, yeah. you can become part of the solution and really roll up your sleeves and get involved and embrace it and really prepare yourself for a very new and exciting time.
Yeah, make sure you're authentic, make sure you're genuine, make sure you are sustainable, you know, from a cultural perspective and an environmental perspective. Because if you're not, there's no place to hide from these people nowadays. And they're right.
Is it difficult for people to be sustainable? Because it seems like businesses come and go, but those love marks last forever.
Yeah, I think sustainability is the key now, you know.
Yeah, I would think so, too.
We're not looking for fads, you know. The market doesn't want fads. Consumers don't want fads. We want things we can trust, of course. We want things we can count on. And we want things that innovate with us. Because as consumers, we're changing every day. Because technology, as you said, Bob, has liberated us. So now this technology is making us, you know, has the potential to free us up or to constrain us, okay? Well, let's use it to free us up. Let's use it to have some fun, and let's move forward that way.
So the companies that get it will be the ones that will last, and the policies and everything else shouldn't be written in stone. They should reflect the role of their consumer and really put them back in the driver's seat, opposed to being very arrogant and kind of say, well, you know, I'm boss, it's my business, I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, and I think the best way to think of the change is 100 years ago, Ford built a great company by you can have any car you want as long as it's black. And today, the great car companies will be, you can have any color, you know, Toyota make them a yellow one, then a red one, then a green one, then a pink one, then a blue, you know. And that's the difference, I think.
Is it different for folks to think futuristic and coming up with the next trends or whatever, or even following trends? There's a lot of companies that don't even know exactly what's going on. And it seems when they're reacting, they're in a catch-up mode.
Yeah, they're very slow. You know, I mean, I think, you know, there's been a lot of, but I think velocity and agility are two of the key determinants now. The less layer, the command and control business model of the past, the management model, you know, is not going to work. You've got to have inspirational players close to customers, sharing the dream, and ready to make decisions, and empowered to make decisions quickly. Because, you know, I mean, my view is those that will be those who fail fast, learn fast, fix fast.
That says it all. And bring this thing to close. Any words of wisdom, anything to leave your readers, our listeners?
Think with your heart.
Is that difficult? because most businesses think from the head, not the heart.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that I think in marketing today, it's about make the big decisions with your heart and the little ones with your head. And that is almost impossible to get through most companies. So if you can do that, boy, you'll be way ahead of the game.
And if people want to know more about your work or your website or anything or your
come
latest
to lovemarks.com. We're there.
All right. And you can go to lovemarks.com to find out about Love Marks find out about the Love Marks books and different things of that nature. It's going to be a series, I see that? Or
yeah.
Oh, good, good. So
there's more.
Oh, there's more to come.
Yeah.
Oh, you got to love that. We've been talking about Love Marks and the new book, The Love Marks Effect, Winning the Consumer Revolution. And we've been joined by Kevin Roberts, who is the CEO of Worldwide Saatchi & Saatchi. And if you want more information, go to lovemarks.com. Thanks so much for being a guest and the best of luck.
Thank you very much.